Baker sat on the cool veranda of his Spokane mansion, listening to Jiz McQueen finish the story of her escape. "Once we hit the open country outside Gufra Martel, it was easy. We found a shooting lodge, broke in, and got some clothes. There were guns there, too, lovely old steel things for killing with explosives. We took them and sold them to some locals. Then we bought rides to the nearest jaunt stage we had memorized."
"Which?"
"Biarritz."
"Travel by night, eh?"
"Naturally."
"Do anything about Foyle's face?"
"We tried makeup, but that didn't work. The damn tattooing showed through. Then I bought a dark-skinned surrogate and sprayed it on."
"Did that do it?"
"No," Jiz said angrily. "You have to keep your face quiet, or else the surrogate cracks and peels. Foyle couldn't control himself. He never can. It was hell."
"Where is he now?"
"Sam Quatt got him in tow."
"I thought Sam retired from the rackets."
"He did," Gisbella said grimly. "But he owes me a favor. He's minding Foyle. They're circulating on the jaunt to stay ahead of the cops."
"Interesting," Baker murmured. "Haven't seen a tattoo case in all my life. Thought it was a dead art. I'd like to add him to my collection. You know I collect curios, Jiz."
"Everybody knows that zoo of yours in Trentham, Baker. It's ghastly."
"I picked up a genuine fraternal cyst last month," Baker began enthusiastically.
"I don't want to hear about it," Jiz snapped. "And I don't want Foyle in your zoo. Can you get the muck off his face, clean it up? He says they were stymied at General Hospital."
"They haven't had my experience, dear." I seem to remember reading something once, somewhere.
Now, where did I...
Wait a minute."
Baker stood up and disappeared with a faint pop. Gisbella paced the veranda furiously until he reappeared 20 minutes later, with a tattered book in his hands and a triumphant expression on his face.
"Got it," Baker said. "Saw it in the Caltech stacks 3 years ago.
You may admire my memory." "To hell with your memory. What about his face?"
"It can be done."
Baker flipped the fragile pages and meditated.
"Yes, it can be done.
Indigo tin, disulfonic acid.
I may have to synthesize the acid, but..."
Baker closed the text and nodded emphatically. "I can do it.
Only it seems a pity to tamper with that face, if it's as unique as you describe."
"Will you get off your hobby?" Gisbella exclaimed in exasperation. "We're hot, understand? The first that ever broke out of Gufra Martel. The cops won't rest until they've got us back. This is extra special for them. But how long do you think we can stay out of Gufra Martel with Foyle running around with that tattooed face?"
"What are you so angry about?"
"I'm not angry, I'm explaining."
"He'd be happy in the zoo," Baker said persuasively, "and he'd be undercover there. I'd put him in the room next to the Cyclops girl."
"The zoo is out, that's definite."
"All right, dear.
But why are you worried about Foyle being recaptured? It won't have anything to do with you. Why should you worry about me worrying? I'm asking you to do a job, I'm paying you for the job."
"It'll be expensive, dear, and I'm fond of you. I'm trying to save you money."
"No, you're not."
"Then I'm curious."
"Then let's say I'm grateful. He helped me, now I'm helping him."
Baker smiled cynically. "Then let's help him by giving him a brand new face."
"No."
"I thought so. You want his face cleaned up because you're interested in his face."
"Damn you, Baker. Will you do the job or not?"
"It'll cost $5,000.
"Break that down."
$1,000 to synthesize the acid, $3,000 for the surgery, and $1,000 for...
"Your curiosity?"
"No, dear." Baker smiled again. $1,000 for the anesthetist."
"Why anesthesia?"
Baker reopened the ancient text. "It looks like a painful operation. You know how they tattoo? They take a needle, dip it in dye, and hammer it into the skin.
To bleach that dye out, I'll have to go over his face with a needle, pore by pore, and hammer in the indicatin disulfonic. It'll hurt. Gisbella's eyes flashed. Can you do it without the dope?
I can, dear, but foil...
To hell with foil! I'm paying 4,000. No dope, Baker. Let foil suffer.
Jeez, you don't know what you're letting him in for.
I know. Let him suffer.
She laughed so furiously that she startled Baker.
Let his face make him suffer, too.
Baker's freak factory occupied a round, brick, three-story building that had once been the roundhouse in a suburban railway yard, before jaunting ended the need for suburban railroads. The ancient, ivy-covered roundhouse was alongside the Trenton rocket pits, and the rear windows looked out on the mouths of the pits, thrusting their anti-grav beams upward. And Baker's patients could amuse themselves watching the spaceships riding silently up and down the beams, their portholes blazing, recognition signals blinking, their hulls rippling with St. Elmo's fire, as the atmosphere carried off the electrostatic charges built up in outer space. The basement floor of the factory contained Baker's zoo of anatomical curiosities, natural freaks and monsters, bought, hired, kidnapped, abducted. Baker, like the rest of his world, was passionately devoted to these creatures, and spent long hours with them, drinking in the spectacle of their distortions, the way other men saturated themselves with the beauty of art. The middle floor of the roundhouse contained bedrooms for post-operative patients, laboratories, staff rooms, and kitchens. The top floor contained the operating theatres. In one of the latter, a small room usually used for retinal experiments, Baker was at work on Foyle's face. Under a harsh battery of lamps, he bent over the operating table, working meticulously with a small steel hammer and a platinum needle. Baker was following the pattern of the old tattooing on Foyle's face, searching out each minute scar in the skin and driving the needle into it. Foyle's head was gripped in a clamp, but his body was unstrapped. His muscles writhed at each tap of the hammer, but he never moved his body. He gripped the sides of the operating table.
"Control," he said through his teeth. "You wanted me to learn control, Jiz. I'm practicing."
He winced.
"Don't move," Baker ordered.
"I'm playing it for laughs."
"You're doing all right, son,"
Sam Quat said, looking sick. He glanced sidelong at Gisbella's furious face.
"What do you say, Jiz?"
"He's learning." Baker continued dipping and hammering the needle.
"Listen, Sam," Foyle mumbled, barely audible. "Jiz told me you own a private ship. Crime pays, huh?"
"Yeah, crime pays. I got a little four-man job, twin jet, kind they call a Saturn weekender."
"Why Saturn weekender?"
"Because a weekend on Saturn would last 90 days. She can carry food and fuel for 3 months."
"Just right for me,"
Foyle muttered. He writhed and controlled himself.
"Sam, I want to rent your ship."
"What for?"
"Something hot."
"Legitimate?"
"No."
"Then it's not for me, son. I've lost my nerve. Joining the circuit with you, one step ahead of the cops, showed me that. I've retired for keeps. All I want is peace."
"I'll pay 50,000. "Don't you want 50,000? You could spend Sundays counting it."
The needle hammered remorselessly. Foyle's body was twitching at each impact.
"I already got 50,000. I got 10 times that in cash in a bank in Vienna."
Quat reached into his pocket and took out a ring of glittering radioactive keys.
"Here's the key for the bank. This is the key to my place in Joburg. 20 rooms, 20 acres. This here's the key to my weekender in Montauk. You ain't tempting me, son. I quit while I was ahead. I'm joining back to Joburg and live happy for the rest of my life."
"Let me have the weekender. You can sit safe in Joburg and collect."
"Collect when?"
"When I get back."
"You want my ship on trust and a promise to pay?"
"A guarantee."
Quat snorted.
"What guarantee?"
"It's a salvage job in the asteroids. Ship named Nomad."
What's on the Nomad? What makes the salvage pay off?
I don't know.
You're lying.
I don't know, Foyle mumbled stubbornly. But there has to be something valuable. Ask Jiz.
Listen, Quat said. I'm going to teach you something. We do business legitimate, see? We don't slash and scalp. We don't hold out. I know what's on your mind. You got something juicy, but you don't want to cut anybody else in on it. That's why you're begging for favors.
Foyle writhed under the needle, but still gripped in the vice of his possession, was forced to repeat,
I don't know, Sam. Ask Jiz.
If you've got an honest deal, make an honest proposition, Quat said angrily. Don't come prowling around like a damn tattooed tiger, figuring how to pounce. We're the only friends you got. Don't try to slash and scalp.
Quat was interrupted by a cry torn from Foyle's lips.
Don't move, Baker said in an abstracted voice. When you twitch your face, I can't control the needle.
He looked hard and long at Gisbella. Her lips trembled. Suddenly she opened her purse and took out 2 500-krone banknotes. She dropped them alongside the beaker of acid.
We'll wait outside, she said.
She fainted in the hall. Quat dragged her to a chair and found a nurse, who revived her with aromatic ammonia. She began to cry so violently that Quat was frightened. He dismissed the nurse and hovered until the sobbing subsided.
What the hell has been going on? He demanded. What was that money supposed to mean?
It was blood money.
For what?
I don't want to talk about it.
Are you all right?
No.
Anything I can do?
No.
There was a long pause. Then Gisbella asked in a weary voice,
Are you going to make that deal with Gully?
Me? No. Sounds like a 1,000-to-1 shot.
There has to be something valuable on the Nomad, otherwise Dagenham wouldn't have hounded Gully.
I'm still not interested. What about you?
Me? Not interested either. I don't want any part of Gully Foyle again.
After another pause, Quat asked,
Can I go home now?
You've had a rough time, haven't you, Sam?
I think I died about 1,000 times nursemaiding that tiger around the circuit.
I'm sorry, Sam.
I had it coming to me after what I did to you when you were copped in Memphis.
Running out on me was only natural, Sam.
We always do what's natural. Only sometimes we shouldn't do it.
I know, Sam. I know.
And you spend the rest of your life trying to make up for it. I figure I'm lucky, Jiz. I was able to square it tonight. Can I go home now?
Back to Joburg and the happy life?
Uh-huh.
Don't leave me alone yet, Sam. I'm ashamed of myself.
What for?
Cruelty to dumb animals.
What's that supposed to mean?
Never mind. Hang around a little. Tell me about the happy life. What's so happy about it?
Well, Quat said reflectively, it's having everything you wanted when you were a kid. If you can have everything at 50 that you wanted when you were 15, you're happy. Now, when I was 15,
and Quat went on and on, describing the symbols, ambitions, and frustrations of his boyhood, which he was now satisfying, until Baker came out of the operating theatre.
Finished?
Gisbella asked eagerly.
Finished. After I put him under, I was able to work faster. They're bandaging his face now. He'll be out in a few minutes.
Weak?
Naturally.
How long before the bandages come off?
6 or 7 days.
His face'll be clean?
I thought you weren't interested in his face, dear. It ought to be clean. I don't think I missed a spot of pigment. You may admire my skill, Gisbella. Also my sagacity. I'm going to back Foyle's salvage trip.
What?
Quat laughed.
You're taking 1,000-to-1 gamble, Baker? I thought you were smart.
I am. The pain was too much for him, and he talked under the anesthesia. There's 20 million in platinum bullion aboard the Nomad.
20 million?
Sam Quat's face darkened, and he turned on Gisbella. But she was furious, too.
"Don't look at me, Sam. I didn't know. He held out on me, too. Swore he never knew why Dagenham was hounding him."
"It was Dagenham who told him," Baker said. "He let that slip, too."
"I'll kill him," Gisbella said. "I'll tear him apart with my own two hands, and you won't find anything inside his carcass but black rot. He'll be a curio for your zoo, Baker. I wish to God I'd let you have him."
The door of the operating theatre opened, and two orderlies wheeled out a trolley on which Foyle lay, twitching slightly. His entire head was one white globe of bandage.
"Is he conscious?" Quat asked Baker.
"I'll handle this," Gisbella burst out. "I'll talk to the son of a... Foyle!"
Foyle answered faintly through the mask of bandage. As Gisbella drew a furious breath for her onslaught, one wall of the hospital disappeared, and there was a clap of thunder that knocked them off their feet. The entire building rocked from repeated explosions, and through the gaps in the walls, uniformed men began jaunting in from the streets outside, like rooks swooping into the gut of a battlefield.
"Raid!" Baker shouted. "Raid! Christ Jesus!"
Quat shook. The uniformed men were swarming all over the building, shouting, "Foyle! Foyle! Foyle! Foyle!" Baker disappeared with a pop. The attendants jaunted too, deserting the trolley on which Foyle waved his arms and legs feebly, making faint sounds.
"It's a goddamn raid!"
Quat shook Gisbella.
"Go, girl, go!" "We can't leave Foyle!"
Gisbella cried.
"Wake up, girl, go!"
"We can't run out on him!"
Gisbella seized the trolley and ran it down the corridor. Quat pounded alongside her. The roaring in the hospital grew louder.
"Foyle! Foyle! Foyle! Leave him, for God's sake!"
Quat urged.
"Let them have him!"
"No!
It's a lobo for us, girl, if they get us. We can't run out on him."
They skidded around a corner into a shrieking mob of post-operative patients, birdmen with fluttering wings, mermaids dragging themselves along the floor like seals, hermaphrodites, giants, pygmies, two-headed twins, centaurs, and a mewling sphinx. They clawed at Gisbella and Quat in terror.
"Get him off the trolley!"
Gisbella yelled. Quat yanked Foyle off the trolley. Foyle came to his feet and sagged. Gisbella took his arm, and between them Sam and Giz hauled him through a door into a ward filled with Baker's temporal freaks, subjects with accelerated time sense, darting about the ward with the lightning rapidity of hummingbirds and emitting piercing bat-like squeals.
"Jaunt him out, Sam."
"After the way he tried to cross and scalp us?"
"We can't run out on him, Sam. You ought to know that by now. Jaunt him out. Caestus Place."
Gisbella helped Quat haul Foyle to his shoulder. The temporal freaks seemed to fill the ward with shrieking streaks. The ward doors burst open. A dozen bolts from pneumatic guns whined through the ward, dropping the temporal patients in their gyrations. Quat was slammed back against a wall, dropping Foyle. A black and blue bruise appeared on his temple.
"Get the hell out of here!"
Quat roared.
"I'm done! Sam!
I'm done!
Can't jaunt! Go, girl!"
Trying to shake off the concussion that prevented him from jaunting, Quat straightened and charged forward, meeting the uniformed men who poured into the ward. Gisbella took Foyle's arm and dragged him out the back of the ward, through a pantry, a clinic, a laundry supply, and down flights of ancient stairs that buckled and threw up clouds of termite dust. They came into a victual cellar. Baker's zoo had broken out of their cells in the chaos and were raiding the cellar like bees glutting themselves with honey in an attacked hive. A cyclops girl was cramming her mouth with handfuls of butter scooped from a tub. Her single eye above the bridge of her nose leered at them. Gisbella dragged Foyle through the victual cellar, found a bolted wooden door, and kicked it open. They stumbled down a flight of crumbling steps and found themselves in what had once been a coal cellar. The concussions and roarings overhead sounded deeper and hollow. A chute slot in one side of the cellar was barred with an iron door held by iron clamps. Gisbella placed Foyle's hands on the clamps. Together they opened them and climbed out of the cellar through the coal chute. They were outside the freak factory, huddled against the rear wall. Before them were the Trenton rocket pits, and as they gasped for breath, Jez saw a freighter come sliding down an anti-grav beam into a waiting pit. Its portholes blazed, and its recognition signals blinked like a lurid neon sign, illuminating the back wall of the hospital. A figure leaped from the roof of the hospital. It was Sam Quatt, attempting a desperate flight. He sailed out into space, arms and legs flailing, trying to reach the upthrusting anti-grav beam of the nearest pit, which might catch him in mid-flight and cushion his fall. His aim was perfect. 70 feet above ground, he dropped squarely into the shaft of the beam. It was not in operation. He fell and was smashed on the edge of the pit. Gisbella sobbed. Still automatically retaining her grip on Foyle's arm, she ran across the seamed concrete to Sam Quatt's body. There she let go of Foyle and touched Quatt's head tenderly. Her fingers were stained with blood. Foyle tore at the bandage before his eyes, working eye holes through the gauze. He muttered to himself, listening to Gisbella weep and hearing the shouts behind him from Baker's factory. His hands fumbled at Quatt's body, then he arose and tried to pull Gisbella up.
"Gotta go," he croaked. "Gotta get out. They've seen us."
Gisbella never moved. Foyle mustered all his strength and pulled her upright.
"Times Square," he muttered. "Jaunt, Jiz."
Uniformed figures appeared around them. Foyle shook Gisbella's arm and jointed to Times Square, where masses of jaunters on the gigantic stage stared in amazement at the huge man with the white bandaged globe for a head. The stage was the size of 2 football fields. Foyle stared around dimly through the bandages. There was no sign of Gisbella, but she might be anywhere. He lifted his voice to a shout.
"Montauk, Jiz! Montauk! The Folly Stage!"
Foyle jaunted with a last thrust of energy and a prayer. An icy nor'easter was blowing in from Block Island and sweeping brittle ice crystals across the stage on the site of a medieval ruin known as Fisher's Folly. There was another figure on the stage. Foyle tottered to it through the wind and the snow. It was Gisbella, looking frozen and lost.
"Thank God," Foyle muttered. "Thank God! Where does Sam keep his weekender?"
He shook Gisbella's elbow.
"Where does Sam keep his weekender?"
"Sam's dead."
"Where does he keep that Saturn weekender?"
"He's retired, Sam is. He's not scared any more."
"Where's the ship, Jez?"
"In the yards, down at the lighthouse."
"Come on."
"Where?"
"To Sam's ship."
Foyle thrust his big hand before Gisbella's eyes. A bunch of radiant keys lay in his palm.
"I took his keys. Come on."
"He gave them to you?"
"I took them off his body."
"Ghoul!"
She began to laugh.
"Liar! Lecher! Tiger! Ghoul! The walking cancer! Golly Foyle!"
Nevertheless, she followed him through the snowstorm to Montauk Light. To 3 acrobats wearing powdered wigs, 4 flamboyant women carrying pythons, a child with golden curls and a cynical mouth, a professional duelist in medieval armour, and a man wearing a hollow glass leg in which goldfish swam, Saul Dagenham said,
"All right, the operation's finished. Call the rest off and tell them to report back to courier headquarters."
The sideshow jaunted and disappeared. Regis Sheffield rubbed his eyes and asked,
"What was that lunacy supposed to be, Dagenham? Disturbs your legal mind, eh? That was part of the cast of our FFCC operation. Fun, fantasy, confusion and catastrophe."
Dagenham turned to Prestain and smiled his death's head smile.
"I'll return your fee if you like, Prestain. You're not quitting." "No, I'm enjoying myself. I work for nothing. I've never tangled with a man of Foyle's caliber before. is unique.
How?
Sheffield demanded.
I arranged for him to escape from Gouffre Martel. He escaped all right, but not my way. I tried to keep him out of police hands with confusion and catastrophe. He ducked the police, but not my way. His own way. I tried to keep him out of Central Intelligence's hands with fun and fantasy. He stayed clear. Again, his own way. I tried to detour him into a ship so he could make his try for Nomad. He wouldn't detour, but he got his ship. He's on his way out now.
You're following?
Naturally.
Dagenham hesitated.
But what was he doing in Baker's factory?
Plastic surgery, Sheffield suggested.
A new face? Not possible. Baker's good, but he can't do a plastic that quick. It was minor surgery. Foyle was on his feet with his head bandaged.
The tattoo, Prestaine said.
Dagenham nodded, and the smile left his lips.
That's what's worrying me. You realize, Prestaine, that if Baker removed the tattooing, we'll never recognize Foyle.
My dear Dagenham, his face won't be changed.
We've never seen his face, only the mask.
I haven't met the man at all, Sheffield said.
What's the mask like?
Like a tiger. I was with Foyle for 2 long sessions. I ought to know his face by heart, but I don't. All I know is the tattooing.
Ridiculous, Sheffield said bluntly.
No, Foyle has to be seen to be believed. However, it doesn't matter. He'll lead us out to Nomad. He'll lead us to your bullying empire, Prestaine.
I'm almost sorry it's all over.
Or nearly.
As I said, I've been enjoying myself. He really is unique.
Chapter 7 The Saturn Weekender was built like a pleasure yacht. It was ample for 4, spacious for 2, but not spacious enough for Foyle and Jiz McQueen. Foyle slept in the main cabin. Jiz kept to herself in the stateroom. On the 7th day out, Gisbella spoke to Foyle for the 2nd time.
Let's get those bandages off, Ghoul.
Foyle left the galley, where he was sullenly heating coffee, and kicked back to the bathroom. He floated in after Gisbella and wedged himself into the alcove before the washbasin mirror. Gisbella braced herself on the basin, opened an ether capsule, and began soaking and stripping the bandage off with hard, hating hands. The strips of gauze peeled slowly. Foyle was in an agony of suspense.
"Do you think Baker did the job?" he asked.
No answer.
"Could he have missed anywhere?"
The stripping continued.
"It stopped hurting 2 days ago.
No answer.
"For God's sake, Jiz, is it still war between us?"
Gisbella's hand stopped. She looked at Foyle's bandaged face with hatred.
"What do you think?"
"I asked you."
"The answer is yes."
"Why?"
"You'll never understand."
"Make me understand."
"Shut up."
"If it's war, why'd you come with me?"
"To get what's coming to Sam and me."
"Money?"
"Shut up."
"You didn't have to. You could have trusted me."
"Trusted you? You?"
Gisbella laughed without mirth and recommenced the peeling. Foyle struck her hands away.
"I'll do it myself."
She lashed him across his bandaged face.
"You'll do what I tell you. Be still, Ghoul."
She continued unwinding the bandage. A strip came away, revealing Foyle's eyes. They stared at Gisbella, dark and brooding. The eyelids were clean. The bridge of the nose was clean. A strip came away from Foyle's chin. It was blue-black. Foyle, watching intently in the mirror, gasped.
"He missed the chin," he exclaimed. "Baker goofed."
"Shut up,"
Jiz answered shortly.
"That's beard."
The innermost strips came away quickly, revealing cheeks, mouth, and brow. The brow was clean. The cheeks under the eyes were clean. The rest was covered with blue-black 7-day beard.
"Shave,"
Jiz commanded. Foyle ran water, soaked his face, rubbed in shave ointment, and washed the beard off. Then he leaned close to the mirror and inspected himself, unaware that Gisbella's head was close to his as she too stared into the mirror. Not a mark of tattooing remained. Both sighed.
"It's clean," Foyle said. "Clean. He did the job."
Suddenly he leaned further forward and inspected himself more closely. His face looked new to him, as new as it looked to Gisbella.
"I'm changed. I don't remember looking like this. Did he do surgery on me too?"
"No," Gisbella said. "What's inside you changed it. That's the ghoul you're seeing, along with the liar and the cheat."
"For God's sake, lay off! Let me alone!"
"Ghoul,"
Gisbella repeated, staring at Foyle's face with glowing eyes.
"Liar! Cheat!"
He took her shoulders and shoved her out into the companionway. She went sailing down into the main lounge, caught a guide bar, and spun herself around.
"Ghoul!" she cried. "Liar! Cheat! Ghoul! Lecher! Beast!"
Foyle pursued her, seized her again, and shook her violently. Her red hair burst out of the clit that gathered it at the nape of her neck and floated out like a mermaid's tresses. The burning expression on her face transformed Foyle's anger into passion. He enveloped her and buried his new face in her breast.
"Lecher," Jiz murmured. "Animal."
"Oh, Jiz."
"The light,"
Gisbella whispered. Foyle reached out blindly toward the wall switches and pressed buttons, and the Saturn Weekender drove on toward the asteroids with darkened portholes. They floated together in the cabin, drowsing, murmuring, touching tenderly for hours.
"Poor Gully,"
Gisbella whispered.
"Poor darling Gully."
"Not poor," he said. "Rich, soon."
"Yes, rich and empty. You've got nothing inside you, Gully, dear. Nothing but hatred and revenge."
"It's enough."
"Enough for now. But later?"
"Later. That depends."
"It depends on your inside, Gully. What you get hold of."
"No. My future depends on what I get rid of."
"Gully, why did you hold out on me and Goofer Martell? Why didn't you tell me you knew there was a fortune aboard Nomad?"
"I couldn't."
"Didn't you trust me?"
"It wasn't that. I couldn't help myself. That's what's inside of me. But I have to get rid of."
"Control again, eh, Gully? You're driven."
"Yes, I'm driven. I can't learn control, Jess. I want to, but I can't."
"Do you try?"
"I do. God knows I do. But then something happens and..."
"And then you pounce like a tiger. Remorseless, lecherous, treacherous, kindless villain."
"What's that?"
"Something a man named Shakespeare wrote. It describes you, Gully, when you're out of control."
"If I could carry you in my pocket, Jiz, to warn me, stick a pin in me..."
"Nobody can do it for you, Gully. You have to learn yourself."
He digested that for a long moment. Then he spoke hesitantly.
"Jiz, about the money."
"To hell with the money."
"Can I hold you to that?"
"Oh, Gully."
"Not that I'm trying to hold out on you. If it wasn't for Vorga, I'd give you all you wanted. All. I'll give you every cent left over when I'm finished. But I'm scared, Jiz. Vorga is tough. What with Prestane and Dagenham and that lawyer Sheffield. I've got to hold on to every cent, Jiz. I'm afraid that if I let you take one credit, that could make the difference between Vorga and I."
"Me."
"Me."
He waited.
"Well?"
"You're all possessed," she said wearily. "Not just a part of you, but all of you."
"No."
"Yes, Gully, all of you. It's just your skin making love to me. The rest is feeding on Vorga."
At that moment, the radar alarm in the forward control cabin burst upon them, unwelcome and warning.
Destination Zero, Foyle muttered,
no longer relaxed, once more possessed. He shot forward into the control cabin. Foyle overran the asteroid with the sudden fury of a vandal raid. He came blasting out of space, braked with a spume of flame from the forward jets, and kicked the weak ender into a tight spin around the junk heap. They whirled around, passing the blackened ports, the big hatch from which Yosef and his scientific people emerged to collect the drifting debris of space, the new crater Foyle had torn out of the side of the asteroid in his first plunge back to Terra. They whipped past the giant patchwork windows of the asteroid greenhouse and saw hundreds of faces peering out at them, tiny white dots mottled with tattooing.
"So I didn't murder them," Foyle grunted. "They pulled back into the asteroid, probably living deep inside while they get the rest repaired."
"Will you help them, Gully?"
"Why?"
"You did the damage."
"To hell with them. I've got my own problems. But it's a relief. They won't be bothering us."
He circled the asteroid once more and brought the weekender down in the mouth of the new crater.
"We'll work from here," he said. "Get into a suit, Jizz. Let's go, let's go."
He drove her, mad with impatience. He drove himself. They corked up in their spacesuits, left the weekender, and went sprawling through the debris in the crater into the bleak bowels of the asteroid. It was like squirming through the crawling tunnels of giant wormholes. Foyle switched on his microwave suit set and spoke to Jizz.
"Be easy to get lost in here. Stay with me. Stay close."
"Where are we going, Gully?"
"After Nomad. I remember they were cementing her into the asteroid when I left. Don't remember where. Have to find her."
The passages were airless, and their progress was soundless, but the vibrations carried through metal and rock. They paused once for breath alongside the pitted hull of an ancient warship. As they leaned against it, they felt the vibrations of signals from within, a rhythmic knocking. Foyle smiled grimly.
"That's Yosef and the scientific people inside," he said, "requesting a few words. I'll give them an evasive answer."
He pounded twice on the hull.
"And now a personal message from my wife."
His face darkened. He smote the hull angrily and turned away.
"Come on, let's go."
But as they continued the search, the signals followed them. It became apparent that the outer periphery of the asteroid had been abandoned. The tribe had withdrawn to the center. Then, far down a shaft wrought of beaten aluminum, a hatch opened. Light blazed forth, and Yosef appeared, in an ancient spacesuit fashioned of glass cloth. He stood in the clumsy sack, his devil face staring, his hands clutched in supplication, his devil mouth making motions. Foyle stared at the old man, took a step toward him, and then stopped, fists clenched, throat working, as fury arose within him. And Jezbella, looking at Foyle, cried out in horror. The old tattooing had returned to his face, blood red against the pallor of his skin, scarlet instead of black. Truly a tiger mask in colour as well as design.
"Gully!" she cried. "My God! Your face!"
Foyle ignored her and stood glaring at Yosef while the old man made beseeching gestures, motioned to them to enter the interior of the asteroid, and then disappeared. Only then did Foyle turn to Jezbella and ask,
"What? What did you say?"
Through the clear globe of the helmet she could see his face distinctly. And as the rage within Foyle died away, Jezbella saw the blood-red tattooing fade and disappear.
"Did you see that joker?" Foyle demanded. "That was Yosef. Did you see him begging and pleading after what he did to me? What did you say?"
"Your face, Gully. I know what's happened to your face."
"What are you talking about?"
"You wanted something that would control you, Gully. Well, you've got it. Your face, it..."
Jezbella began to laugh hysterically.
"You have to learn control now, Gully. You'll never be able to give way to emotion, any emotion, because...
But he was staring past her, and suddenly he shot up the aluminum shaft with a yell. He jerked to a stop before an open door and began to whoop in triumph. The door opened into a tool locker, 4x4x9. There were shelves in the locker and a jumble of old provisions and discarded containers. It was Foyle's coffin aboard the Nomad. Yosef and his people had succeeded in sealing the wreck into their asteroid before the holocaust of Foyle's escape had rendered further work impossible. The interior of the ship was virtually untouched. Foyle took Gisbella's arm and dragged her on a quick tour of the ship, and finally to the purser's locker, where Foyle tore at the windows of wreckage and debris until he disclosed a massive steel face, blank and impenetrable.
"We've got a choice," he panted. "Either we tear the safe out of the hull and carry it back to Terra, where we can work on it, or we open it here. I vote for here. Maybe Dagenham was lying. All depends on what tools Sam has in the Weekender anyway. Come back to the ship, Jis."
He never noticed her silence and preoccupation until they were back aboard the Weekender, and he had finished his urgent search for tools.
"Nothing," he exclaimed impatiently. "There isn't a hammer or a drill aboard. Nothing but gadgets for opening bottles and rations."
Gisbella didn't answer. She never took her eyes off his face.
"Why are you staring at me like that?"
Foyle demanded.
"I'm fascinated,"
Gisbella answered slowly.
"By what?"
"I'm going to show you something, Gully."
"What?"
"How much I despise you."
Gisbella slapped him thrice. Stung by the blows, Foyle started up furiously. Gisbella picked up a hand mirror and held it before him.
"Look at yourself, Gully," she said quietly. "Look at your face."
He looked. He saw the old tattoo marks, flaming blood red under the skin, turning his face into a scarlet and white tiger mask. He was so chilled by the appalling spectacle that his rage died at once, and simultaneously the mask disappeared.
"My God," he whispered. "Oh, my God."
"I had to make you lose your temper to show you," Gisbella said.
"What's it mean, Jess? Did Baker goof the job?"
"I don't think so. I think you've got scars under the skin, Gully, from the original tattooing and then from the bleaching. Needle scars. They don't show normally, but they do show blood red when your emotions take over and your heart begins pumping blood. When you're furious or frightened or passionate or possessed. Do you understand?"
He shook his head, still staring at his face, touching it in bewilderment.
"You said you wished you could carry me in your pocket to stick pins in you when you lose control. You've got something better than that, Gully. Or worse, poor darling. You've got your face."
"No," he said. "No."
"You can't ever lose control, Gully. You'll never be able to drink too much, eat too much, love too much, hate too much. You'll have to hold yourself with an iron grip."
"No," he insisted desperately. "It can be fixed. Baker can do it, or somebody else. I can't walk around afraid to feel anything because it'll turn me into a freak."
"I don't think this can be fixed, Gully."
"Skin graft."
"No. The scars are too deep for graft. You'll never get rid of this stigmata, Gully. You'll have to learn to live with it."
Foyle flung the mirror from him in sudden rage, and again the blood-red mask flared up under his skin. He lunged out of the main cabin to the main hatch, where he pulled his spacesuit down and began to squirm into it.
"Gully, where are you going? What are you going to do?"
"Get tools," he shouted. "Tools for the safe."
"Where?"
"In the asteroid. They've got dozens of warehouses stuffed with tools from wrecked ships. There have to be drills there. Everything I need. Don't come with me. There may be trouble." "How is my goddamn face now? Showing it? By Christ, I hope there is trouble."
He corked his suit and went into the asteroid. He found a hatch separating the habited core from the outer void. He banged on the door. He waited and banged again, and continued the imperious summons until at last the hatch was opened. Arms reached out and yanked him in, and the hatch was closed behind him. It had no airlock. He blinked in the light and scowled at Yosef and his innocent people gathering before him, their faces hideously decorated. And he knew that his own face must be flaming red and white, for he saw Yosef start, and he saw the devil mouth shape the syllables, "Nomad." Foyle strode through the crowd, scattering them abruptly. He smashed Yosef with a backhand blow from his mailed fist. He searched through the inhabited corridors, recognizing them dimly, and he came at last to the chamber, half-natural cave, half-antique hull, where the tools were stored. He rooted and ferreted, gathering up drills, diamond bits, acids, thermites, crystallants, dynamite jellies, fuses. In the gently revolving asteroid, the gross weight of the equipment was reduced to less than 100 pounds. He lumped it into a mass, roughly bound it together with cable, and started out of the store cave. Yosef and his scientific people were waiting for him, like fleas waiting for a wolf. They darted at him, and he battered through them, harried, delighted, savage. The armor of his spacesuit protected him from their attacks, and he went down the passages searching for a hatch that would lead out into the void. Gisbella's voice came to him, tinny on the earphones, and agitated.
"Gully, can you hear me? This is Jiz. Gully, listen to me."
"Go ahead."
"Another ship came up 2 minutes ago. It's drifting on the other side of the asteroid."
"What?"
"It's marked with yellow and black colors, like a hornet."
"Dagenham's colors."
"Then we've been followed."
"What else? Dagenham's probably been tailing me ever since we busted out of Gufra Martel. I was a fool not to think of it. How'd he tail me, Jiz? Through you?"
"Gully!"
"Forget it. Just practicing jokes."
He laughed without amusement.
"We've got to work fast, Jiz. Cork up in a suit and meet me aboard Nomad. The purser's room. Go, girl!"
"But Gully!"
"Sign off. They may be monitoring our wave band. Go!"
He drove through the asteroid, reached a barred hatch, broke through the guard before it, smashed it open, and went into the void of the outer passages. The scientific people were too desperate getting the hatch closed to stop him. But he knew they would follow him. They were raging. He hauled the bulk of his equipment through twists and turns to the wreck of the Nomad. Gisbella was waiting for him in the purser's room. She made a move to turn on her microwave set, and Foyle stopped her. He placed his helmet against hers and shouted,
"No shortwave. They'll be monitoring, and they'll locate us by DF. You can hear me like this, can't you?"
She nodded.
"All right. We've got maybe an hour before Dagenham locates us. We've got maybe an hour before Yosef and his mob come after us. We're in a hell of a jam. We've got to work fast."
She nodded again.
"No time to open the safe and transport the bullion."
"If it's here."
"Dagenham's here, isn't he? That's proof it's there. We'll have to cut the whole safe out of the Nomad and get it to the Weekender. Then we blast."
"But..."
"Just listen to me and do what I say. Go back to the Weekender. Empty it out. Jettison everything we don't need. All supplies except emergency rations."
"Why?"
"Because I don't know how many tons this safe weighs, and the ship may not be able to handle it when we come back to gravity. We've got to make allowances in advance. It'll mean a tough trip back, but it's worth it. Strip the ship. Fast! Go, girl, go!"
He pushed her away, and without another glance in her direction, attacked the safe. It was built into the structural steel of the hull, a massive steel ball some 4 feet in diameter. It was welded to the strakes and ribs of the Nomad at 12 different spots. Foyle attacked each weld in turn with acids, drills, thermite and refrigerants. He was operating on the theory of structural strain, to heat, freeze and etch the steel until its crystalline structure was distorted and its physical strength destroyed. He was fatiguing the metal. Gisbella returned, and he realized that 45 minutes had passed. He was dripping and shaking, but the globe of the safe hung free of the hull with a dozen rough knobs protruding from its surface. Foyle motioned urgently to Gisbella, and she strained her weight against the safe with him. They could not budge its mass together. As they sank back in exhaustion and despair, a quick shadow eclipsed the sunlight pouring through the rents in the Nomad hull. They stared up. A spaceship was circling the asteroid less than a quarter of a mile off. Foyle placed his helmet against Gisbella's.
"Dagenham," he gasped, "looking for us. Probably got a crew down here combing for us, too. Soon as they talk to Yosef, they'll be here."
"Oh, golly."
"We've still got a chance. Maybe they won't spot Sam's Weekender until they've made a couple of revolutions. It's hidden in that crater. Maybe we can get the safe aboard in the meantime."
"How, golly?"
"I don't know, damn it. I don't know."
He pounded his fists together in frustration.
"I'm finished."
"Couldn't we blast it out?"
"Blast? What, bombs instead of brains? Is this the mental McQueen speaking?"
"Listen. Blast it with something explosive. That would act like a rocket jet. Give it a thrust."
"Yes, I've got that. But then what? How do we get it into the ship, girl? Can't keep on blasting. Haven't got time."
"No. We bring the ship to the safe."
"What?"
"Blast the safe straight out into space. Then bring the ship around and let the safe sail right into the main hatch. Like catching a ball in your hat. See?"
He saw.
"By God, Jiz, we can do it."
Foyle leaped to the pile of equipment and began sorting out sticks of dynamite gelatin, fuses, and caps.
"We'll have to use the shortwave. One of us stays with the safe. One of us pilots the ship. Man with the safe talks the man with the ship into position, right?"
"Right. You'd better pilot, Gully. I'll do the talking."
He nodded, fixing explosive to the face of the safe, attaching caps and fuses. Then he placed his helmet against hers.
"Vacuum fuses, Jiz. Time for 2 minutes. When I give the word by shortwave, just pull off the fuse heads and get the hell out of the way. Right?"
"Right."
"Stay with the safe. Once you've talked it into the ship, come right after it. Don't wait for anything. It's going to be close."
He thumped her shoulder and returned to the Weekender. He left the outer hatch open and the inner door of the airlock as well. The ship's air emptied out immediately. Airless and stripped by Gisbella, it looked dismal and forlorn. Foyle went directly to the controls, sat down, and switched on his microwave set.
"Stand by," he muttered. "I'm coming out now."
He ignited the jets, blew the laterals for 3 seconds, and then the forwards. The Weekender lifted easily, shaking debris from her back and sides like a whale surfacing. As she slid up and back, Foyle called,
"Dynamite, Jiz, now!"
There was no blast. There was no flash. A new crater opened in the asteroid below him, and a flower of rubble sprang upward, rapidly outdistancing a steel ball that followed leisurely, turning in a weary spin.
"He's off."
Gisbella's voice came cold and competent over the earphones.
"You're backing too fast. And incidentally, trouble's arrived."
He braked with the rear jets, looking down in alarm. The surface of the asteroid was covered with a swarm of hornets. They were Dagenham's crew, in yellow and black banded spacesuits. They were buzzing around a single figure in white that dodged and spun and eluded them. It was Gisbella.
"Steady as you go,"
Jiz said quietly, although he could hear how hard she was breathing.
"He's off a little more. Roll a quarter turn."
He obeyed her almost automatically, still watching the struggle below. The flank of the Weekender cut off any view of the trajectory of the safe as it approached him, but he could still see Gisbella and Dagenham's men. She ignited her suit rocket. He could see the tiny spurt of flame shoot out from her back and came sailing up from the surface of the asteroid. A score of flames burst out from the backs of Dagenham's men as they followed. Half a dozen dropped the pursuit of Gisbella and came up after the Weekender.
It's going to be close, Gully.
Gisbella was gasping now, but her voice was still steady.
Dagenham's ship came down on the other side, but they probably signalled him by now and he'll be on his way. Hold your position, Gully. About 10 seconds now.
The hornets closed in and engulfed the tiny white suit.
Foyle, can you hear me? Foyle!
Dagenham's voice came in fuzzily and finally cleared.
This is Dagenham calling on your band. Come in, Foyle.
Jizz, Jizz, can you get clear of them? Hold your position, Gully. There she goes. It's a hole-in-one, son.
A crushing shock racked the weekender as the safe, moving slowly but massively, rammed into the main hatch. At the same moment, the white-suited figure broke out of the cluster of yellow wasps. It came rocketing up to the weekender, hotly pursued.
Come on, Jizz, come on!
Foyle howled.
Come, girl, come!
As Gisbella disappeared from sight behind the flank of the weekender, Foyle set controls and prepared for top acceleration.
Foyle, will you answer me? This is Dagenham speaking.
To hell with you, Dagenham, Foyle shouted. Give me the word when you're aboard, Jizz, and hold on.
I can't make it, Gully.
Come on, girl.
I can't get aboard. The safe's blocking the hatch. It's wedged in halfway.
Jizz!
There's no way in, I tell you.
She cried in despair.
I'm blocked out.
He stared around wildly. Dagenham's men were boarding the hull of the weekender with the menacing purpose of professional raiders. Dagenham's ship was lifting over the brief horizon of the asteroid on a dead course for him. His head began to spin.
Foyle, you're finished. You and the girl. But I'll offer a deal.
Gully, help me. Do something, Gully. I'm lost.
Vorga,
he said in a strangled voice. He closed his eyes and tripped the controls. The tail jets roared. The weekender shook and shuddered forward. It broke free of Dagenham's borders, of Gisbella, of warnings and pleas. It pressed Foyle back into the pilot's chair with the blackout of 10G acceleration, an acceleration that was less pressing, less painful, less treacherous than the passion that drove him. And as he passed from sight, there rose up on his face the blood-red stigma of his possession. Part 2. With a heart of furious fancies, whereof I am commander, with a burning spear and a horse of air, to the wilderness I wander. With a night of ghosts and shadows, I summon Dame to tourney. 10 leagues beyond the wide world's end. Methinks it is no journey. Tom A. Bedlam. Chapter 8. The old year soured as pestilence poisoned the planets. The war gained momentum and grew from a distant affair of romantic raids and skirmishes in space to a holocaust in the making. It became evident that the last of the world wars was done, and the first of the solar wars had begun. The belligerents slowly massed men and materiel for the havoc. The outer satellites introduced universal conscription, and the inner planets perforce followed suit. Industries, trades, sciences, skills, and professions were drafted. Regulations and oppressions followed. The armies and navies requisitioned and commanded. Commerce obeyed, for this war, like all wars, was the shooting phase of a commercial struggle. But populations rebelled, and draft jaunting and labor jaunting became critical problems. Spy scares and invasion scares spread. The hysterical became informers and lynchers. An ominous foreboding paralyzed every home from Baffin Island to the Falklands. The dying year was enlivened only by the advent of the Four-Mile Circus. This was the popular nickname for the grotesque entourage of Geoffrey Four-Mile of Ceres, a wealthy young buffoon from the largest of the asteroids. Four-Mile of Ceres was enormously rich. He was also enormously amusing. He was the classic bourgeois gentilhomme, the upstart nouveau riche of all time. His entourage was a cross between a country circus and the comic